Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce. It is 3:17 p.m. on Monday, March 12th. Members present are Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Knopp, Representative Birch, Representative Josephson, and myself, Chair Keto. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Susie Edwardson is our recording secretary today, and Cody Grusendorf is our LIO moderator. Reminder to please turn your cell phones off. We do have two pieces of legislation coming before the committee today. Senate Bill 80, Telecommunications Disabled Subscribers, and Senate Bill 126, Visiting Physicians with Sports Teams. Both bills are in their first hearing. We will hear the bills and then set them aside for future action. First up is Senate Bill 80, Telecommunications Disabled Subscribers. If we can have Mr. Walton and Senator Costello come forward, place your names and affiliations on the record, and provide us with your introductory statement, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm Mia Costello. I serve my constituents for Senate District K, and I'm really pleased to be here today to share with you Senate Bill 80. I'll give a brief introduction, and then my aide, Josh Walton, will walk through the details of the bill. The reason for this legislation and why I introduced it was followed a meeting that I attended of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and at that meeting and following the meeting, I learned from Commissioner Norm Rokeberg about the need to update state statutes to help serve Alaska's deaf, hard of hearing, and speech impaired community. So with that, Mr. Chair,
thank you.
Josh Walton will walk us through the bill.
Mr. Walton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Josh Walton, I am staff to Senator Costello, and it's an honor to be here before you today. So back in 1990, the legislature authorized the Regulatory Commission to adopt a surcharge, apply a surcharge to on a per-line basis to telephone subscribers. The purpose of the surcharge was to fund the provision of services for disabled subscribers who are hard of hearing or deaf. And the surcharge at the time was quite nominal. I mean, it was 1 cent for per line per month for residential lines. And if you had a multi-line business, your surcharge was 2 cents per line per month. Now, the challenge that has come about is that since that took place in 1990 and in the almost 30 years now that since then, the technology has changed and the definitions and the statutes are outdated and the surcharges have had to change as well, because the way that the bill or the way that the statute is worded, it refers to telephone services and telephone subscribers. Telephone comes out as defined as referring only to landlines. And as we all know, the number of landlines has actually been dropping sharply, especially over the last few years as folks move to services that aren't generally described as are different from that, so like wireless phones and also VoIP phones, voice over internet protocol phones. Because of that, in order to fund this process, the RCA has had to increase the size of the surcharge all the way up to 9 cents per month per residential landline and 18 cents per line for multi-line businesses. But the language in the bill or in the statutes also limits the sorts of technologies that these can be used for. Our bill, accompanied by a worthy House companion bill, House Bill 202, would fix that primarily by changing the language in the statutes from the word telephone to telecommunications telecommunications devices. So essentially it updates the language to be a little bit more useful, provide some more flexibility, and increase the base of subscribers subject to the surcharge, since currently wireless and VoIP lines are not, the RCA is not authorized by the legislature to apply the surcharge to them. With the growth of, with the expansion into cellular and VoIP subscribers, the surcharge would be able to be reduced significantly, and we have some folks online who'd be able to talk more definitively about that, but it could fall to estimated somewhere between 4 or even 5 cents per line for residential customers. So that's the bill in a nutshell. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions you may have. I believe we have some folks from the RCA and former commissioner, regulatory commissioner, and member of this body, Norman Rokeberg, I believe, is also online to speak. We've asked him to say a few words since this was a bill that he has has been pushing and is, you know, he has a real heart for this and has been. It's a bill that's near and dear to his heart.
Thank you, Mr. Walton. We've got a question from Representative Birch and then a question from Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one of the things that comes to mind is looking at how widespread cell phone use is and texting. I mean, it seems like there's texting is kind of almost, at least for short-term communications, has really replaced a lot of audible communications. And, it seems like a reasonable approach, but I'm just wondering if you'd looked into that. I mean, I don't know what percentage of the communications happens by text versus, but I think if, as hearing disabled or otherwise impaired, hearing, deaf, or speech impaired, that texting might be a something that's kind of happened in the last 15 years or so to help out.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, that's a very good observation. And certainly, if you're hearing impaired, I'm certain that I would suspect that you spend a lot of time texting as more preferred mode of communication. However, there are a lot of other assistive technologies for folks who suffer from those sorts of disabilities. And what this does is it seeks to try and make those technologies available. I'm one of those where, and Mr. Chairman, this is off, but my cell phone is the only line that I have, and because it is, I pay nothing into this on a monthly basis. As far as how many texts are sent, it's really done based on a per line basis. So, I mean, if you text a lot, you use the same line as if you call, but it's just simply tied directly to that. But a lot of the folks who need these technologies need them in connection with their wireless devices or their making use of the new voice over internet protocol technologies or video conferencing, for example. So there's a little bit of an equity issue in the fact that the source of the funding is coming from this one small segment of landlines that's ever shrinking. So this would make it more equitable and also make it more possible for the Regulatory Commission to provide these services.
You have a follow-up, Representative Birch?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What kind of implements do you purchase with? I mean, what do you actually acquire with the money that would be accumulated here? And the reason I ask that is if we talked about former Representative Rokeberg, would it be like equipment that would facilitate a public hearing, for instance? And I think now they've got technology where you can get a voicemail message automatically transcribed, and there's also, I think it's Dragon software, and there's technology out there. But what kind of stuff do you anticipate being acquired with this funding?
Through the chair, Representative Birch, it's a little hard. I'm not the best person to answer that question. I think that if we, former Representative Rokeberg is probably very eager to answer that question for you. He's mentioned some of the things that have been mentioned to me are strobe lights on the phone for folks who are deaf. When the phone rings, it lets them know, rather than instead of an audible signal, a visual signal. They also have an iPad pilot program to facilitate, since iPads and other telecommunication devices of that kind have video conferencing capabilities. Well, that's excellent for people who communicate through American Sign Language, for example. Those are a few of the examples that have been mentioned to me. But as I said, I'm sure we have some folks online who can give a much more thorough description. Great. Thank you.
Representative Tanop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure who I'm going to direct the question at, so I'll ask the question, and multiple questions maybe, and I'll let you, Mr. Chairman, decide who the most appropriate or maybe the sponsor can. So
I think Representative Knopf, the only people we have before us right now are the bill sponsor and staff, and so
okay, I didn't know if he had somebody on the floor.
Yeah, yes, and while I'm
I'll direct it to the sponsor. So first, I'll apologize if I ask something stupid because I have not read the bill. So it's probably in there if I dive into it. But you will probably know the answers to these, so it'll be simpler for me sitting there reading it. Is this completely outside of what the USF fund does, Universal Service Fund, that there states in the process of repealing? So this is a separate charge on your phone bill outside of that. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, yes, that's absolutely correct. The USF charge is a completely separate issue.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So imagine these fees are also, like Representative Burt mentioned, what's purchased, but I imagine there are probably more subsidies back to telecommunication companies to provide these services, like the USF is. Is that correct? Or how are they?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I'm not certain of the mechanics of it, if it's something where it's a subsidy provided to the telecommunications companies to provide the equipment, or if it's directly, if the equipment is directly provided by the program.
Maybe we can find that out for a future meeting. And one last follow-up.
Representative Knopf.
So I see the proposal is, as you mentioned, is maybe an opportunity to decrease the surcharge by 50%. You mentioned going back down to 4 or 5 cents, maybe. We don't know that yet. So I'm wondering what work has been done. So landlines will still be assessed, but now we're taking in cell phones just for practical purposes. There's a lot larger volume of cell phones. So I'm just kind of wondering, I see we're looking at $300,000 for an adequate working budget every year. And I'm just wondering what, if we've done the numbers between what we anticipate in cell phones, what revenues would really generate it, 4 or 5 cents a line, if it could even go less than the, I'm trying to do the math on that. So
through the chair, Representative Knopf, I don't have those numbers specifically, but former Representative Roekberg does, and he's run those numbers for us. I'm sure we'll be happy to tell you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have any other questions for the sponsor or staff? Seeing none, I think we'll move on now to invited testimony, and looks like we do have former Representative Roekberg online. Representative Roekberg, can you provide us with some of your initial comments and then stay available for, it sounds like we might have a few questions for you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Norman Roekberg, calling in from overseas, and I appreciate you taking up the bill. This is the most important piece of legislation, and I'm happy to be here today in a committee that I was a member of for 12 years and had the honor of chairing for 4 years. So I appreciate that. I recently retired from the RCA, and part of my responsibilities as a commissioner was oversight and helping herd the cats on the telecommunications relay service. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if you could be so kind as to inquire of the telecommunications operators, whether members of the RCA, I believe they should be online and be prepared to answer any specific questions you have. Would you be able to verify that, sir?
Representative Roper, we do have members from the Regulatory Commission available online for questions.
Very good. I was hoping they would be there. Let me just say briefly, I appreciate Senator Costello and Mr. Walton's testimony. I missed some of it. But in a nutshell, this bill will, and I want to thank also Representative Colleen Sullivan for introducing House Bill 202, its companion measure. This bill will do what is essentially a statutory fix and help bring us into the 21st century in terms of how we're operating telecommunication services in this state. Currently, the statute limits the assessment of a legislatively mandated surcharge for TRS purposes to telephone or wireline services. By changing this, this will allow the commission to, by regulation, change the surcharge impacts and include wireless and voice over internet services. The testimony has explained, that we can be provide some greater detail, and I'm going to defer the exact numbers, but within the last 2 years, as many as 15,000 and up to 19,000 landlines have been eliminated, and only in part have much of this has migrated to cell phone and voice over internet type telephony. And as a result, because of the requirements for providing the services, the amount of revenues is commenced to diminish, and albeit we are still in the black because of the increase in the surcharge level. So the intention of this bill would be to allow the commission to reduce the surcharge in the range of 3 to 4 to 5 cents, depending on the elements of the projected budgets and requirements, and spread the more equitably any very small burden to provide the services to the deaf, hard of hearing, and speech disabled community. So that's the essential element here. In the current law, if I might refer to AS 4205-296, a provision that states that persons with that makes available reasonable access to all phases of public telephone service to deaf, hard of hearing, and speech impaired telephone subscribers. The words are changed slightly if you look at the bill, substituting telecommunications and so forth, and particularly the term disabled. But the point is, Mr. Chairman, is that the legislative mandate to the commission is to make available reasonable access to all phases of these telecommunication services. Well, currently, the equipment that's being distributed is limited to teletype equipment, which is quite obsolete. I've been told by the head of the program and the FCC that TTYs will be supported until the last one breaks, and which I think is an admirable objective. Additionally, we provide a analog type and a digital CapTel system. And what this is, in response to Representative Birch's question, is a method of texting over a wireline service. Here again, it's a relatively old in its technology, but has some effectiveness. But it's certainly not what people are using nowadays. The people, particularly those that have hearing difficulties, use more modern technology. And one of the blessings of technology is that new software and other methodologies have been able to provide the abilities for people to better communicate, into the point that it's enabled many to be able to be employed that would perhaps not otherwise be employed by having access to these technologies. An example of new technology is coming. It's called RTT. It's real-time texting. And machines that will be available. It's been approved by the FCC, and the technology is evolving to be able to allow those that type of devices to be implemented and deployed nationally and internationally for that purpose. Also, in answer to Representative Birch's inquiry and also Representative Knopf's inquiry, right now the commission is, well, in the last year, has established a iPad tablet pilot program where some, in the first phase, some 22 people were selected upon application from throughout the state in various areas. Particularly, we were concerned about checking to see if iPads would work in certain areas that don't have the best connections in terms of speeds and so forth. Where these iPads have to work off of a Wi-Fi type system. They're not directly the type that will be connected to voice communication per se, but they will be if you're able to use the Wi-Fi or VoIP to be able to be connected. So the initial process and period has been completed. I think the commission is waiting for the verification and the measurability of the impacts of these iPads, and the indications are quite successful, which is consistent with a number of other states that have already done these things. And particularly one state that we patterned the initial program after was the state of New Mexico. And so we've been able to learn from other states and trying to implement this. There's a next round of it's underway now, I believe, with 20 people. That will be the final portion of the pilot program. But we're real pleased to be able to offer this. This is important because, particularly for people that have speech impairments and certain other peculiar problems that I should say speech disabilities, forgive me. The quality and the nature of the software is a tremendous benefit to these folks. And so we're real pleased to be able to move forward in this front. Also, as Mr. Bolton has indicated, we've reinstituted the availability of phone or sound amplifiers as well as signaler, some basic equipment, which is real popular. The initial appropriation was for approximately $3,000 for the sound amplification. Now it became a wait list, and the commission authorized an additional $5,000 for that project. So, and we were able to work out the existing budget in the $288,000 range annualized to be able to implement and fund the pilot program, so no additional monies were needed for doing that. Right now, the cash flow is positive, and as Mr. Walton indicated, this program is entirely, if you will, self-funding. It's mandated and required by the legislature, and has no impact on the fiscal activities of the state. The only impacts are certainly the clear fact that it impacts each telephone subscriber's bill, and we'd like to make sure that's a telecommunications device that we have authority to charge. Also of interest is that the FCC funds certain other technologies, for example, VRS, which is a video relay services, which allows people to talk computer to computer using, for example, American Sign Language or sign language in order to see each other and communicate, let's say, deaf to deaf, if you will. And there's other different methodologies. The entire telecommunication relay system is a self-standing system. It's got its own numbers, like 900 or 711 numbers that you call into the system. It allows translators to make the interpretation, and that's part of the mandate in state Alaska state statute, is that the hearing disabled, deaf, and hard of hearing be able to communicate with a fully hearing enabled person. So that's why there's this whole system interpretation exists. And to move on, the I chuckled when I misspoke. And one of the elements of the bill, which is quite important, is that the bill recognizes the appropriate language to be used for the speech disabled, and changes the word, deletes word impairment, and substitutes the word disabled for that, so that the current and vernacular and description of that disability is articulated in the legislation. Finally, the bill does provide for an effective date. It should. I would ask the chairman to review the need for a Labor and Commerce Health Committee substitute to change the effective date to 18 from 17, which passed the Senate. And with that, I would ask that the committee make a direct inquiry of the expert witnesses that are online from the commission to get the specific data regarding the numbers shrinking surcharge base that exists now. And with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, and thank you very much again, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Thank you, Representative Roper. Thank you for your service to the state in the legislature and on the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. We do have a question from Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd echo those sentiments of thanks, Representative Rokeberg. There's a couple of items in here in the background material that are startling. I suppose not surprising, but startling. 560,000 landlines, which they refer to as POTS, or plain old telephone service, which I thought was interesting, but it goes from 560,000 down to 256,000 in 2016, indicating a 55% or 54% decline in 7 years. So I understand the push. I mean, it makes sense that you would look at the lines that are replaced. One question I do have: there's a zero fiscal note associated with this, but as you've testified and as the record indicates here, there's a revenue raised is in the high 300s to $400,000, and is that just What does that actually go for? Who holds those dollars, and who allocates how those dollars are expended? Through the chair.
Number one, the surcharge fund goes into a dedicated, if you will. And I don't want to be. I should be very selective in my word usage. Goes into a fund, which is administered by the TRS provider, who is selected on a competitive bid basis by the commission. Currently, it's Sprint. Sprint is our current provider, and they provide an annual budget on a five-year basis. Their relationship is based on a five-year cycle, and they annually submit a budget, which the commission must review and approve, and reallocates the amount of expenditures. A portion of the funds that are expended go for the actual interpreted minutes that the Sprint pays the actual interpreters and the relay interpreters. Additionally, of course, there's the equipment distribution, which is a relatively small part. A big part is the outreach program, which my recollection right now is exceeds over $75,000 a year, which is directed mostly at ATLA, which is Alaska Assisted Learning Technologies. I'm getting it wrong here. But there the outreach to go is to travel throughout the state and provides information and facilitates the distribution of equipment to people with needs. They are the implementer right now of the pilot program under the auspices of SPRINT and the commission. And so the budget is all self-contained. It is under the strict oversight of the commission. And one of our concerns right now is the diminution of revenue and the need for a stable funding source so we can utilize and adopt some of the newer technologies that are available. I think that the commission historically may have not have done its job to be fully consistent with legislative intent in terms of the keeping up with technology and assisting the deaf community as much as they should have, frankly. And so that's one thing that I that helped influence my interest in this particular level. So I think the numbers you cited, rather than the bridge, have been updated, and I think the commission testimony can do that. You'll be I was actually kind of shocked by the latest numbers. It's pretty compelling. It's hard to analyze the impacts of the economy and population loss, which we have some recent demographic information on. But nevertheless, the numbers are pretty clear about trend lines and where we're headed on this. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Representative Roekberg. Follow-up from Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. Just trying to get a kind of a back of the envelope look here. If you have a $400,000 budget, I think it says $678,000 wireless, $300,000 wireline, and VoIP is almost a million lines at 4 cents a piece is about $432,000. Is that like half and half between equipment and personnel? I mean, how is that generally distributed? Are there like two or three interpreters? I didn't realize there's people involved here. Is it people?
Oh, yeah. No, there's a huge, there's a large system of interpreters that are national in scope. There's also a contract for the actual collection. There's a separate accounting service that Sprint deals with as a subcontractor that makes the direct collections from the telecommunications companies. And that's one of the issues. The FCC and many other states have voice over internet carriers, and there's different types. There's one's called nomadic, one's domestic, some of them like Vonage and so forth. They're hard to pin down. They're difficult sometimes to get the legislatively mandated revenues from. So there's all those types of issues that we don't have to deal with either from the commission or otherwise. The equipment is a relatively small part of the budget right now. And, matter of fact, that's because the only equipment that we're distributing, officially are teletypes with only one or two a year being utilized. And approximately, 25 to 40 different sets of, the CapTel type equipment. So that's why, a number of, disabled folks use cell phones, whether they are paid by themselves or they're provided by Lifeline programs, which are fundamentally free of charge and mandated by the FCC, that people can call in and through a number. For example, if you're a fully enabled person, you can call that number and get an interpreter, or you call a number and you'll be answered by an interpreter, will in turn relay the call to the person you're calling, who may be deaf. So it's a rather comprehensive broad system that works nationally. And the FCC supports certain elements, but not the local requirements that we pay for here.
Last follow-up?
Follow-up?
Briefly, would it be possible to get a copy of your last approved budget, just as a point of interest, through the chairman?
Absolutely, I would think so. But that's
okay.
Forgive me. Let me just make one statement here. I'm not sure I made clear for the record. Being retired and no longer with the commission, I'm speaking as a private citizen right now. So please, forgive me out of habit. I may sound like I'm a commissioner, but I'm no longer a commissioner. So please beg my pardon for if I misspeak, and please allow the commission to be more responsive, and they're the responsible party for the information directly, and they have the updated stuff. And they, I'm sure, would be happy to provide that, which is public information.
Thank you, Representative Roekberg, and you did mention that you were retired, so we will pass that question.
See, that's probably why I retired. I forgot I said that.
Representative Roekberg, we also have a question from Representative Wohl. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe you, as you said, you're retired. Maybe a current person could give me more accurate information. But so anyhow, landlines went from about a half a million or a quarter million over a recent time period, and it looks like you want to add a surcharge to wireless and computer users, which will get you back up to about a million users, and therefore your rate will go down. I noticed before you had a residential and a commercial rate, but your new calculation just shows one rate. Was that intentional, just to have one rate and not differentiate?
Thank you for the question, Representative. Well, that's a very good question. That was a more of a plug number for scoping purposes, but I would be, were I still on the commission, probably recommending, for simplicity's purposes, going from the multi-business line two-tier method, which is in regulation now, to probably recommending a single tier. Just for ease of implementation and so forth. And I think the rate will be low enough, so it won't be a burden to anybody, particularly residentially. And that would be just my personal opinion. That's certainly up to the commission. The process is if in fact the bill is passed, the statute changes, the commission takes up a regulatory rulemaking, which is common. Every time we make a change to the surcharge, it is a rulemaking. It's not a very involved or in-depth rulemaking process, much more simplified than the APA. But the regulations do provide for a two-tiered system currently, but that would be able to be a matter of a pretty simple draftsmanship and change of that if they so desired. So, I mean, that would be up to the commission, and they would be able to speak to that in the future. They would have to go through a whole hearing process.
And we've got a follow-up from Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a pilot program for 15 or 20. How many TRS customers are there now, or do you know how many this is covering? Not the pilot, but the overall program.
That's a good question. Like, there's over 1,000 TRS machines, I mean, TTY machines, which I suspect many of them are in government agencies. But that number escapes me. And Mr. Moises from the carrier section, I believe, is online. He might be able to venture a better guess or a statement to that effect. Quite a large number of people. Matter of fact, one bit of data we got from the Census Bureau indicated that it was their opinion that speech-disabled and hard-of-hearing people, a growing population, and maybe as many as 35,000 Alaskans that are affected by these disabilities. And but the certainly the numbers are substantially less. I would I'm saying they're in the thousands, but I'm not sure exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony. We do have Dean Gates signed up as invited testimony, but do not show that he has called in yet, so we'll move forward to Jan Wilson, who has signed up for questions with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Can you place your name and affiliation on the record and let us know if you have any comments, and then we'll entertain some questions.
This is Commissioner Jan Wilson of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson.
I just want to update the information that you probably have in your packets on the number of landlines. They have, in fact, continued to decline. The decline between January of 2016 and January of 2017 was 15,345 landlines, further declining to January of this year to 19,005 landlines. That's a 5.6% decline from 2016 to 2017, and to 2018, a 7.4% decline. The number now, as of January 2018, is 236,173 landlines. So the decline just keeps on going.
Great. Thank you. Do we have any questions?
I have a question.
Representative Bull has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Wilson, obviously, since this program started, the technology has changed immensely. Is there outsourcing options, cloud computing, apps? I mean, we're talking about iPads. Do you guys ever wonder if obviously some people are still using teletype, but as Representative Birch mentioned, texting obviously is pretty prevalent. Is there other technologies that you think that aren't sort of housed within the state or would be an option, and do you feel somehow limited sometimes?
I think that Commissioner Roepberg, while he was at the commission, did extensive looking into the kinds of technologies that were available. And I have only recently taken over for him with respect to the TRS program and have not myself looked into those technologies, but it's something the commission staff has also been engaged in looking into.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Commissioner Wilson? Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska that would like to make a statement regarding this bill? We would make that opportunity available.
No further statement. We're happy to answer questions.
Okay. Thank you, and thank you for being available online. We don't have anybody else signed up for invited testimony at this time. We will open up public testimony at 4 o'clock p.m. And actually, before we get too much further into that, I would like to notice that we have had been joined by Representative Bull at 3:21 p.m. and Representative Stutes at 3:27 p.m., and we've lost Representative Stutes, but I want the record to show correct. Public testimony is open. I do not have anybody signed up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House or Senate Bill 80? Seeing no one, we will leave public testimony open, and Senate Bill 80 will come back before the committee in short order. With that, we will set the bill aside and move on to Representative Birch.
Yeah, I did notice that one of the list of testifiers invited or expected was Mr. Dean Gates, President of the Alaska Deaf Council. I've worked with Dean in his capacity as an attorney for the municipality of Anchorage, and an incredibly capable person, but I did not see any written testimony. Are the people that are signed up to testify, are they being notified? Are they fully aware that they could submit written testimony, correct?
Representative Birch, my understanding is yes, and we will leave the record open for Mr. Gates when he is available to come in to talk with the committee and present us with his comments. So Representative Sullivan Leonard and then Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. and also the Key Coalition, as well as the Special Counsel for Disabilities. The Governor's Commission has also expressed their support for this particular legislation. And I thought we had letters already in the packet, but I'll make sure to get those.
Thank you, Representative Knopp.
I just wanted to mention for the record, Mr. Chairman, to the sponsor that, in fact, the questions I was asking, as I had a chance to browse this, I was finding most of the answers to my questions. And I personally think it's a good bill. I hadn't read it thoroughly, but I'm finding what I was looking for. So.
All right. Thank you, Representative Knopp. So with that, we will set Senate Bill 80 aside and bring forward Senate Bill 126, Visiting Physicians with Sports Teams. And we have Senator McKinnon and Ms. Lucky, if you can come forward, place your names and affiliations on the record, and provide us with your opening statement.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Chair Quito, Vice Chair Wohl, members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Senator Anna McKinnon. I represent Eagle River, Chugiak, some of the bases, and a portion of Muldoon. Mr. Chairman, the bill before you allows a doctor who is already under contract with a sports team or a team to continue to treat their patients while competing in Alaska without fear of being charged with practicing without a license. Mr. Chairman, 35 states have passed similar legislation, creating clarity and certainty for athletic team physicians. As we speak, 13 states are also considering adding this to their statutes. This bill would not allow a physician to treat Alaskans, only team members from the state in which the physician is licensed. This bill has no effect on a physician providing emergency medical services. Already in Alaska state statutes, we have civil liabilities that would apply. Mr. Chairman, SB 126 would add an additional exception for physicians who are, one, licensed in another state, two, under contract with an athletic team in that state, and traveling to, from, or in Alaska to participate in a sporting event with that team to treat members of that team while in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do I have any questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Knopp?
Thank you, Senator. And so I did get an opportunity to read this bill before we got here. So I guess my question is, it was actually the question that came to mind is, why do we even have to have this? I mean, it just seems so obvious. I guess I thought it was just a routine practice. So I think my question is, has there been an incident in the past, or just kind of a language cleanup, or are we trying to fix a problem before it happens? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knopp, there is a national movement to try to protect liability issues existing when team doctors travel into different states, and they're trying to create consistent language through all states. So this was brought to me by an orthopedic surgeon in my community that travels with our teams into other states, and they've experienced clarity in legislation so that they can't be sued, and they'd like to see that exist in Alaska as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Birch.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had no idea. That seems like a very reasonable approach. Does somebody have to get a license, or is it just, I mean, they just show up, and as long as they're under contract, they're good to go? I mean, they don't really need to get a clearing or anything. They just kind of show up, they're under contract, and they're licensed someplace else, and they're good to go.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, it requires three parts. One, they have to be licensed in another state. Two, they have to be under contract. So there has to be a contractual agreement with that doctor traveling with the team. And so it's not a variable, it's and, those three components. The third component is traveling to and from and in Alaska. So they already are licensed, and then they don't have to go through any other licensing in our state if those three obligations are met.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We went through something similar for the traveling vets out of state with the Iditarod. So except they had to get some sort of designation. But this sounds very reasonable, and appreciate you bringing it forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any other questions, Bill Sponsor, Representative Wohl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator McKinnon, I just want to make sure I heard you correctly in your introduction. Did you say this traveling physician cannot treat Alaskans, or was I hearing things?
Through the chair, Vice Chairman Wohl, That is correct. They would not be treating license, but in the case of an emergency, if there was an Alaskan that was in an emergency situation, they could treat, and they would, if something was wrong or right, they would fall under Alaska state statute. The Good Samaritan Act would actually cover them for trying to treat. It's just they wouldn't come into our state and treat. They are supposed to be treating team members. If I could have my staff respond for additional clarity.
No, Jane, Ms. Lucky, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record, first, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Julie Lucky, and I am staff to Senator McKinnon. Through the chair, Representative Wohl, the construct of this bill is an exemption from licensure. So a person, if they wanted to treat Alaskans, if they were in another state, there are other methods they could use, maybe a temporary licensure. However, this bill, the way it's constructed, would mean that they could come into our state without getting a license, an Alaska license. They'd already be licensed in their home state, as long as they were only treating the athletic team members from their state. So should they want to treat Alaskans, they would have to go through and either get a temporary license or get some other licensure through the department.
Okay. Thank you. And follow up?
Thank you. No, I get it, and it all makes perfect sense, and I like it. I was just thinking the one weird situation that if a visiting team from another university from out of state happened to have an Alaskan on the team, obviously they could be treated because they're on the team, but it would be – they may happen to also be an Alaskan, so I wouldn't want that to be some weird loophole or something, but yeah, I get it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Bill's sponsor? We have invited testimony. We have Dr. Jeffrey Moore. Dr. Moore, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Hi, yeah, this is Dr. Jeff Moore. I'm an orthopedic surgeon here in Anchorage with the Orthopedic Physician Alaska Group. So to answer that, I think I can't remember who I just had heard about asking about if they can treat Alaskans. Yeah, I think if there was an Alaskan on the other team that the visiting team physician was taking care of, this would stipulate that he could help take care of that person. But yeah, I agree that we are pretty much covering our own teams here, and this is really just for the visiting teams coming in. And again, it's kind of limited as far as what they can do. They're not going to have hospital privileges for this, so they're not going to do any kind of surgeries or anything like that. This would just be taking care of, say, like an infection, or say somebody has like exercise-induced asthma, they could help give an inhaler or something like that.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Moran. Do you have any additional testimony you'd like to add for our record?
Well, I would just say that this law is passed down 35 states, pending in 13 other states, including ours. So it's pretty non-controversial, and we're just trying to get it passed everywhere so that all of us that are taking care of teams, if we travel, we know the teams the best, and we can take care of those teams, including people coming up here.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Moore. Do we have any questions for Dr. Moore? Seeing no questions, we thank you for your testimony and for being available. We do have the department, the Alaska Board of Medicine, Ms. Deborah Stover, and available for questions. Do we have any questions for the department from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to public testimony at 4:10 p.m. We'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 126. I do not see anyone signed up for public testimony, but we will leave public testimony open through our next or till our next hearing. And with that, we will set Senate Bill 126 aside at this time and bring it back before us, hopefully in relatively short order. And that concludes our business for the day. Our next meeting will be on Wednesday, March 14th at 3:15 p.m. We have House Bill 403, Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. For the committee's knowledge and benefit, we did send an email out. These are some technical changes that were originally part of associated with what we saw here last year as House Bill 157. And so we're going to have the department before us to go over these changes with the potential that those changes might get incorporated into House Bill 157 on the Senate side. But we will be doing that. And then we also have House Bill 401, Insurance and Reinsurance Valuation Credits. And then we will also have a presentation from the 2020 census operation by Julie Lamb, who's the Assistant Regional Director, and James Christie, Regional Director of Los Angeles Regional Office for the U.S. Census Bureau. With that, at 4:11 p.m., House Labor and Commerce stands adjourned. Thank you.